Hi, I'm Scott Finn, Executive Director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, and you're on The Front Porch. Today we're going to talk about broadband in West Virginia, and joining us is Senator Chris Walters. He represents Putnam County and Kanawha County. Senator Walters, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
And we have, as always, Rick Wilson with the American Friends Service Committee. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Scott.
And we have Lori Lynn of the Charleston Gazette-Mail. Hey, Lori.
Hi, Scott.
And support for The Front Porch comes from the Charleston Gazette-Mail, where you can hear both sides of the story every single day on their dueling editorial pages. Check it out at wvgazettemail.com. Senator Walters, your breakout issue, your signature issue, has been broadband expansion in West Virginia. Let's just start broadly and talk about why that issue. Why do you think that's so important?
Well, let's talk about where we are as a state currently. West Virginia, we rank 51st in technology behind American Samoa. We rank 52nd in internet connectivity behind Guam and Puerto Rico. And we rank 47th in competition in the United States. If you look at the FCC and their ratings, they say that nationwide, individuals who lack broadband access is about 17%. In West Virginia, it goes to 56% of urban residents and 74% of rural residents in the state of West Virginia lack broadband access. So as a state, it's a really bleak picture of where we currently are.
What does that mean in terms of economic development? Does it just mean that I can't watch my Netflix as fast, or does it have a real impact on the economy?
Because Walking Dead is about to come out with another season, I believe, right?
Clearly very important right now.
It certainly does mean that for a lot of West Virginians, you can't even watch Netflix. But whenever you get to the economics of it, the 21st century economy is through broadband connectivity. I mean, this isn't just for your homes. This is for businesses as well. And talking to different individuals in the community that try to bring businesses to West Virginia, a lot of businesses that move to Charleston move here and then they get here and say, wait a minute, I don't have the broadband connectivity I have in capital cities or smaller cities, other places in the United States. So we really have a difficult time in getting these companies to expand when they move here and also getting them to move here in the first place because of our lack of broadband connection.
And what do we mean when we say broadband? I mean, mm-hmm. I know there have been sort of fights about, you know, speed. Is it based on a minimum speed? Is it the technology specifically? How do you define broadband?
Sure. Broadband is your ability essentially to upload and download things from the internet. Like whenever you're attaching something to an email, the quickness of that, being able to get different types of signals in. I mean, if you look at the way that business is done, I can't tell you in the last 2 weeks how many times I've done video-type conferencing meetings. And it's very difficult in this day and age not to have that technology. I was talking to a farmer from Pocahontas County who wants to sell his livestock online as he raises it. But he doesn't have the broadband connectivity to do so. So he had to find somebody who actually was from Alabama that came up, picked up all his livestock, took him down to the area to put it into a livestock auction. I mean, there are so many different areas where people in West Virginia are tied because of the lack of broadband access.
So a business could move here and have connectivity but not be happy with the speed and the amount of it, right?
Well, you'd hope a business would move here. But essentially, if we don't have that connectivity, it's a huge deterrent as to moving companies to West Virginia.
Or people, like you said, your Pocahontas County farmer, who's losing income because he doesn't have broadband. If he had broadband, he wouldn't have to rely on somebody else to sell his cattle.
Yeah, and this isn't just about business and economics. This is about school as well, education. I mean, WVU, if you read about their online testing, you know how many times at home you have to reset your router? Think to your own home. Well, if your router, if your connection drops while taking an online test at WVU, mm-hmm. you fail the test. It shows that you logged off the test, which looks like you're going to cheat. So we have kids that are taking online tests or adults that are taking online tests that if your router drops, you fail the test. And that's common standard across the United States when it comes to online testing.
So we were in Randolph County yesterday, to your point, mm-hmm. Senator Walters, training people how to use PBS Learning Media, which is this educational service where kids can look up educational videos and games. And they get these videos up, and they're buffering all the freaking time. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're wanting to watch the segment of Nova about the DNA of polar bears, but it was taking twice as long as it should take because it would pause and buffer and pause and buffer. And that's time that the students could be learning something. Instead, they're just waiting for the computer to catch up.
Well, part of that is this. When we had BTOP, which was the fiber optic expansion in West Virginia, it was fiber going from the lines directly to the schools. But if you actually look at a BTOP map, that fiber goes about 2 blocks in distance, and then it connects to existing lines. Well, unfortunately, in West Virginia, most of those existing lines are copper. So you have fiber pipe running into a copper pipe. That's like having a six-lane interstate going into a two-lane highway. So that's what's happening in West Virginia. We don't have a good interstate system in the state of West Virginia. And that's what I'm trying to propose to do, is to build a great interstate system in our state that then off-ramps can be built directly to the homes. So that's kind of what my legislation does.
Okay, so can you walk through exactly how it would work?
Yeah, absolutely. Essentially, what we're trying to do is we're trying to build those interstate systems. My bill calls for around 2,500 miles of interstate to be built in West Virginia. The cost ranges, you know, differently. I talked to one group and they said, it's actually Bill Gates Foundation suggests rural middle mile costs $19,000 a mile. You talk to some of the providers here in West Virginia, they say it costs up to $35,000 a mile. So if you take those numbers, it's $72 million is the ceiling for 2,500 miles of fiber interstate. Let's put that in perspective. To build 2 miles of interstate highway costs $80 million. To build 2,500 miles of fiber costs $72 million. So essentially, I'm calling for an interstate system to go on the rural routes to go buy as many homes in the state of West Virginia as possible. This interstate system would make it that providers, any company, there's not going to be any monopoly on these lines, anybody can get onto them, can then drop a line directly from the poles to the houses and hit West Virginia citizens in their homes. By doing this, we'd be the first state to do this as a completely infrastructure-type mindset. West Virginia would be able to offer the fastest, most affordable fiber optic interstate in the United States. Talk about economic development opportunities. When talking to businesses, we'd be able to look at them and say, not only do we have some of the lowest electrical costs in the United States, some of the lowest land costs in the United States, but we also offer the fastest, most affordable fiber optic system in the country. That's what the mindset is behind the legislation. It's thinking big, but it's thinking in a way of the same way the United States had to focus on the interstate system. This is our generation's interstate system. And if we don't have it, we have no chance in competing in a 21st century economy.
Yeah, I would agree. I think one thing that's exciting about this proposal is we know West Virginia is going through a tough economic time, and we're not sure what's going to take off or pull us through, but we need the kind of things in there that will help with whatever happens, whichever way it goes. And that's where I think broadband's a big part, good infrastructure. One thing I'm curious about, though, is we all daily hear headlines about the state budget and how it's tanking and how it's going to be tough, and how much static are you going to run into?
Is another way. Well, essentially, the bill itself doesn't call for funding from the state budget. The bill itself calls for money in a few different ways. First, it talks about the expansion of telemedicine, connecting all the hospitals to every single health clinic in the state of West Virginia. The FCC is giving tremendous amounts of grants monies for the expansion of telemedicine across the United States. West Virginia would be the first state in the nation to put a proposal in to connect the entire state of West Virginia's rural health system to our hospitals, asking for grant money from the FCC. Another one is, if you look at our towers, we were able to build towers with a BTOP grant. We got about $30 million to do so. Well, this calls for a wired line 911 emergency services system to be built in West Virginia. By building the wired line, we'd be able to then go to the Department of Defense and request grant money to do that as well. So another grant opportunity. And then finally, the bill calls for bonding. Essentially, when we build this network, we need to show that we can get the money to repay bonds. Well, the way that the state would be allowing companies to get onto this network is a cost of repaying the bonds and upkeep, and that's it. The reason why we'd be able to be so affordable is the state wouldn't be looking for a profit. They'd be looking to pay off their build. And if New York looks at it, where we get our bonds, and they say, hey, you can't do this, then we don't get the bond, and we have a fund there that's available for when monies are available to be able to build a network. So it actually has zero cost on our current state GDP, our current state budget, because we frankly don't have the money.
One thing that jumped out at me in just glancing over the bill, the version that you had introduced last year, is that all areas of the state are considered to be unserved areas. Is that really the way to look at it, though? I mean, you know, we have broadband here in Charleston. How do we make sure this doesn't just turn into, you know, the government kind of inserting itself into companies fighting over the areas that are actually profitable? I mean, how do we make sure that this is actually going to areas that are truly, you know, rural and truly unserved?
Sure, absolutely. Well, that was the bill last year, and I have added some more language to make sure that the impetus is putting it on underserved communities. However, if you're not building the interstate system going from an urban center to the rural areas, then how are the providers in the rural area, the urban centers, going to get to those rural areas? So you have to go from an urban area to a rural area, because if you don't build the road to get there, there's no way they're going to be able to get there and build out.
If this is something that could be basically bonded out, paid back with funds, why hasn't the private sector done this so far?
Well, here's the reason. Essentially, in the state of West Virginia, we have so few houses between one area to another area. We have an incumbent provider that we have already subsidized, actually. If you look at the lines that are being used by Frontier, they're mainly our Bell Atlantic copper lines that the federal government subsidized back when the Bells and all of those companies were putting the copper lines in. So in a sense, we already have built a network to go on out, but mainly it's a copper network. If all of a sudden we take a provider, and let's say Lumos, who has some of the most fiber in the state of West Virginia, if we want Lumos to go to Pocahontas County, well, how much are they going to have to charge to each household they hit in Pocahontas County, the few households that are out there, whenever they build that line? It's going to be an astronomical cost. It's not affordable for one provider just to go out and to get on it. But if we build an affordable interstate system where they can build just drop-offs of the lines, then all of a sudden you're going to create competition. It's just because of the way that we have, the state is, and topography of the state, it's going to be very difficult for them to get a great return on investment with one company. Now, when these lines can be leased to multiple companies and create competition, that's where you can get your money back.
I mean, this is the confusing thing to me, Senator, is, mm-hmm. you know, what's the opposition then? If this is going to be funded by a bunch of federal grants mm-hmm. and with bonded out and repaid with the proceeds, why not? What's been the holdup as far as getting it through the legislature?
Well, I mean, the incumbent provider has multiple lobbyists, have multiple delegates and senators that work for them. You have a monopoly in the state of West Virginia, essentially in a lot of the regions of the state. And the opposition has been they don't want competition. You have the cable companies that are against this. If you think where you live in Charleston, how many cable companies do you have? Suddenlink. If you go to the Putnam County part where I represent, how many cable companies do you have? You have Comcast, and that's it. The cable companies don't compete with each other. If we built this interstate of lines, all of a sudden, any telecom that has video equipment will be able to compete in cable. And then you'll have more choices. You'll have lower cost and better service in your households. They don't want the competition. And I don't blame them for not wanting the competition. If I had a monopoly, I wouldn't want competition either. However, that's where we're really getting a lot of the pushback. The cable companies don't want the competition. Frontier doesn't want the competition.
You know, going to your question, Scott, when we think about telephone, for example, in the early part of the 1900s, I don't know that my family would have had telephone service. I mean, we lived in a very remote place that certainly was not profitable for the telephone company to come in and, you know, physically put up a wire just to serve our home.
And the solution to that was a rural co-op.
Right.
I kind of wonder, I mean, are there other models besides the state doing this, Senator Walters, that could work? Or does it have to be the state government doing it here?
Well, the other models where it's been done is North Carolina did it with BTOP money. They built an interstate system using the federal money and had it open to all providers to have access to it to provide out to the customers. Essentially, we're trying to do the same thing that North Carolina did. We're taking the federal money, the grants that we're going to try to get, have it open. The state's not getting in the broadband business. The state's building an interstate where companies can get on the interstate and build the off-ramps to sell their product.
It's kind of like a toll road.
It's like a toll road in a sense, but I say that very lightly because toll roads usually have the impetus of they're going to be making money. This isn't for the fact of making money.
It's not an eternal toll road.
There's going to be a charge because you have to upkeep the lines.
Right.
So you have mm-hmm. to have a charge for upkeep.
Who would operate this system, Senator?
Well, essentially, we've been trying to place it in a few places, but we've came down to the Water Development Authority is where it'd go through. They have all the mapping and technologies. If you look at fiber, all it is a pipe. All right, it's just a pipe with some cords in it. That's it. So what we'd be doing is we'd use their mapping technologies for gas pipes, water pipes, and now we put fiber pipes in. And they already have the authority to do bonding in the state of West Virginia, whereas a WVNet does not have that authority. So we're moving it to the operations under the Water Development Authority.
Technologically, is a pipe with wires in it the most efficient way to get to some of these areas? I mean, there are alternatives, wireless, even, you know, satellite. Surely there are some parts of the state where it's going to be better just to not bother to lay the line in these really remote areas.
Absolutely. Some of the haulers of West Virginia we just aren't going to be able to get to with this type of service. However, whenever you look at the communities, whenever you look at Marlington, West Virginia, we're all familiar with Marlington, they get 3 meg speed. I mean, they get horrible speed in Marlington. If they're lucky, they get 3 meg. So you start talking about these larger communities in rural West Virginia, they absolutely could be served. So you have to, that's why it's 2,500 miles and it's not a 30,000 mile network. We can't get up every holler in West Virginia. We wouldn't be able to get the bonds. We wouldn't be able to get it paid back. Satellite service is going to have to be there for some of them. But if you look at HughesNet, which is the number one satellite provider in West Virginia, it's just above dial-up internet. I mean, those technologies are still really being developed. There are some wireless type technologies that are available. However, you have to have line of sight. And with our topography in West Virginia,
so difficult
it
with
just
the
makes
mountains.
It almost impossible. Yeah. So because of our topography, which is so great for tourism, it's so great for so many things, whenever you go to economics, our topography holds us back a lot in attracting businesses and in our cell phone service and in our broadband service. I mean, it's hand in hand.
No, I was going to say there are parts of the state, big parts of the state, that don't even have cell phone service
That's correct.
So you're going to help a brother out with it, with some cell phone service out in the hall.
You know, this actually does have a component dealing with cell phone service. When you have those wired lines, it's easier for the towers to be connected, for them to build it. They don't have to. The way that we use our cell phones these days with our smartphones and the LTE or 3G service, so much information is being sent to these towers. Well, those towers, if they have a wireline to them, can then process the information and get it back to you quicker. And it enables a better LTE service throughout the state of West Virginia. Hmm. So it has a component there for the cell companies as well, not just for broadband. But going back to the bill, it says in the bill that a certain percentage of the lines will be used for state government to get free internet for our government buildings. Our school system pays $12 million a year to connect to the internet in West Virginia. So much just our schools pay. You get beyond our schools, look at Division of Highways. Look at our DMVs, how many DMVs we have. Look at all those systems of government throughout the state of West Virginia and tally together how much we're paying for internet. You could pay off the bond in 2-3 years just by keeping the rates consistent. And then it'd be done. The state would get free internet service to all the government buildings.
What if, just philosophically, there are some people that, even if in theory they might think it could work, philosophically just don't believe government should get into yet another aspect of our lives. Mm-hmm. Is there some way that a private company could be enticed to do this for us?
You know, we tried to give through BTOP, we gave money to a private company. We gave $42 million to Frontier. If you look at what was built, and it can be pulled up online, but if you look at what was built, and if you look at the report that was sent back from the federal government said that the BTOP money was used in no way did it help any competition in the state of West Virginia, and all it did was extend a monopoly. Private companies, as they are in it for themselves, to make more money for their private companies. And essentially, if they aren't doing that, they're doing a disservice to their stockholders. But whenever you're trying to incentivize a private company to try to get it out, they don't want the competition. This bill calls for competition. We rank 47th in the United States in competition. This bill calls for more competition in West Virginia, because when you have more competition, you have better service and you have better experiences from those companies and lower cost.
Is there, you know, the state spent $30 million on these routers a few years ago, mm-hmm. and there was this, you know, sort of medium-sized scandal about the routers ending up unusable. Is there a resistance to the government getting involved in technology just because the government generally isn't great at it?
The state of West Virginia failed in BTOP in a lot of ways. Now, the schools do have some good connectivity in a lot of areas because of BTOP, so I guess it wouldn't be considered a complete failure. The towers that were built, not a single packet of data has been sent across those towers to date, and we spent $30 million on those towers. If you look at the routers, everyone knows $22,300 per router was not the routers that we needed in West Virginia. The only router that's getting about 20% of its potential being used right now is in Bridgeport, where the city's using it to connect all their buildings, and they're using it for their gigabyte build-out in the city that they're getting ready to do. So that's where one of those routers are actually being used almost to its potential. There's a reason why I didn't put it in the Office of Technology. The head of the Office of Technology came from Frontier, oversaw the BTOP expansion for Frontier, and I felt like there was no oversight. And there was no oversight from the governor's office whenever that was being done.
So what kind of oversight are you envisioning?
Well, I took it out of the hands of anybody that has any connection directly to a provider company. Put in the Water Development Authority, where Chris, the head of the Water Development Authority, has no connection to any of the providers. I'm trying to take it out of the sections of government where there would be impropriety, the sense of impropriety.
But how will we make sure that it could be just lack of knowledge as much as any impropriety that's causing the problems?
And I have it sent to be bid out by individual zones. No one company is going to do the bid for the entire state, which happened with the towers and also happened with BTOP. So we are zoning the entire state to have it built individually. So it looks like so we have the opportunity for more companies to be able to compete to build this fiber. So that's one way I've been able to do it. There's only so much you can do. I'd love to put it underneath the Broadband Development Council to have them oversee it, but the governor still hasn't appointed anybody to the council since the legislation's passed. We have 1,500 vacancies of councils in the state of West Virginia where the governor hasn't appointed anybody and doesn't seem like he's going to be appointing anybody. So we really don't have a council to oversee it because of lack of governmental appointments.
So I have a question about how you anticipate this going in the legislative session. Is there a champion in the House? I've seen... Over the years, you've seen one bill that really had strong support in one chamber mm-hmm. and didn't quite get there in the other. Is that different this now? Or?
Well, no, it's still, this will be a difficult fight. This won't be a simple piece of legislation to get through. In the Senate, we had people say, well, you want to subsidize fiber. Why aren't we subsidizing grocery stores? My community needs a grocery store. And you just sit there and you kind of laugh in a sense because there's no comparison, but generationally, there's a difference. You know, I'm 29 years old. I'm the youngest member of the Senate. So I understand the importance of this 21st century infrastructure. Some people didn't grow up with the iPads, computers, that technology, don't understand the importance. So there was a huge educational gap last year that we had to overcome, and we've been overcoming. Situations like this, getting in the press, being in the media, getting information out, has really been a great service to the opportunity for this bill. Going to the House, I do. Roger Henshaw is interested in doing the bill in the House. He lives in Clay County, just over a mile from the interstate, and gets 1 megabyte per second internet service. It's close to our interstate systems where people aren't getting broadband connectivity. I mean, it's amazing. You usually would think so far away from the interstates, but it's just right here. You know, if you go out to areas in my district, Kanawha and Putnam County, two of the most populated counties in the state, there are tons of people in our counties that don't have good internet service, don't have cable to their homes.
And there are a lot of folks that have it but pay a lot of money for it, too.
You take the people in Pocahontas County, they're paying the same rates we're paying here in Kanawha and Putnam County, and they get 3 meg, where we're getting 25.
And you do wonder how that affects, like, Pocahontas County or places where people might want to move there and retire, or they might want to work out of Pocahontas County mm-hmm. and telecommute to D.C., you can't really do that if you don't have good internet service. Yeah. Have you heard stories about that sort of thing?
Well, I have, but I've heard it from a different point of view. Snowshoe. Snowshoe has just gotten a great internet connection, a great internet hookup where there's a project where everyone in Snowshoe for $40 a month is going to get gigabyte internet. Well, what's happening up at Snowshoe? The head of Snowshoe has said now people are arriving a day earlier and leaving a day later because they can do their work in the condos, in the cabins, and everything at Snowshoe where they couldn't before. Where they'd only get there Friday and stay to Sunday, they're getting there Thursday and staying till Monday. So you're seeing an economic driver where more companies are coming here, staying more time, doing retreats in those areas where they wouldn't ever do so before, and they're staying longer and spending more money here in West Virginia. So this is helping our tourism economy as well. I mean, every situation you look at it, if you don't have this, you're doing a disservice. And Chattanooga, Tennessee did this. Chattanooga, as a city, built out broadband to every single home in Chattanooga. You can get 1,000 up, 1,000 down speed in Chattanooga at your house for $70 a month. That's the cost they have. Amazon has moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee. Cisco has moved to Chattanooga, Tennessee. They've had a $200 million increase to their city's GDP since they built out this system. They're very fortunate to have some of the national internet backbone right near Chattanooga, Tennessee, where they can go off of. So they do have some great connections that we in West Virginia don't have. But they went and made this investment, and this bill is modeled similar to how they did it in Chattanooga.
We haven't given you a chance to talk about the job study. Could you go mm-hmm. into that, and what are the assumptions behind that, and what kind of jobs people are thinking will come out of this?
Absolutely. So something that sometimes we do in the legislature is we try to get an economic impact study. I'd like to say that this last session, I went out on my own, contacted a West Virginia State University, and asked them to please create an economic impact study on the piece of legislation I put forward. It's actually the first economic impact study I've ever seen attached to a bill in the legislature utilizing a state university. Well, West Virginia State University said year one after the completion of this network, it'd create 4,000 permanent jobs and bring $919 million to our state's GDP. Those are big numbers. If you look at who we're going to connect to bring to West Virginia, they look at a lot of data centers, a lot of telecommunications type companies, dispatchers, national type dispatchers. And the reason why is if you look at those, and I know no one really likes telemarketers, but if you look at the telemarketer type setup, all it is a big, huge warehouse of phones, all those phone lines. Well, they're paying $300,000, $400,000 a month for service in other states. If they come here with this network, they could be paying $50,000 a month to get on it.
So these are like back office type jobs?
A lot of back office type jobs, a lot of tech type jobs. I mean, if you look at Apple puts out a study every single year about how much money they pay out to app developers. West Virginia ranks last in the United States in receiving money for app developers. They look at people that are going to be doing startups. They look at app creators, the options, the opportunities we have here for individuals to be creating apps and selling them on the Apple marketplace. There are so many different areas that the study takes into mind and shows where jobs could be created. It's really a lot of entrepreneurial spirit, entrepreneurial type individuals that they're looking at as well coming into West Virginia. Chattanooga, Tennessee is going to be the 3D printer capital of the world because of their internet connectivity. West Virginia, with what we're trying to build, we'd have the fastest, most affordable network connectivity in the United States. We could do that here because you don't need anything much more than internet connectivity, low energy costs, and low land prices. And we would be able to offer all three of those better than anybody else in the country.
I don't think anyone here would disagree that, that having great internet connectivity wouldn't be spectacular. How is this different from other big infrastructure projects that were supposed to be game changers? If we build these four-lane highways, you know, it's going to change West Virginia economically. If we're able to extend water to everybody, and yet if you don't have an educated, healthy populace, is it really going to have that sort of impact? Could you build this and then people use it for watching movies but not for building apps? How do you know it's going to be the right thing to decide to spend our energy and time on?
People need to watch Walking Dead too, Scott. Let me just
I watch it every Sunday. But anyway, to go to your question, how many of our states have four-lane highways? How many other states have water sent to the homes? How many of our states are looking at broadband as infrastructure and building it as infrastructure? We'd be the first state in the nation to actually look at it that way and do it. So that's kind of what separates it apart.
And this would be something we could tout as a different story about West Virginia. It's public relations as well as the infrastructure itself.
Absolutely. And then going back to your other point of our population in West Virginia, you talked about the health, you talked about elderly individuals, you talked about education. Are we able to attract and keep our youth in West Virginia currently? We're not. But if we had this 21st century technology where all of a sudden we would have the best connectivity of internet service, how many youths looking to do a startup would stay in Morgantown? How many youths looking to do a startup internet type business would be in the Eastern Panhandle, here in Charleston, Fayette County, Fayetteville? I mean, what an amazing city that is. Mm-hmm. I mean, how many youths would be able to access this, build their businesses, and go? I mean, that's the difference. Do we have that educated population? We do, and they're leaving the state in droves. They're leaving our universities left and right. West Virginia University would have free internet access on this system. Our universities would have the fastest, most affordable internet connectivity going into our universities. What type of benefit do you think that would be to attracting students, to attracting large companies to invest in our universities, to be able to put out that type of education and create that workforce here?
You know, several years ago, somebody wrote a book called Bold Endeavors. It was about how many times in the past there have been sort of public investments that were game changers, like the Louisiana Purchase, for example. I mean, it's hard to deny that one, right? The rail system, land-grant universities, the interstate highway system. And so, I mean, I think there's plenty of precedent for this. That's one thing I think is really interesting about it.
Again, this is our generation's interstate highway. This is essentially, you know, I speak to, at 29 years old, this is absolutely our generation's interstate highway. And if we don't build it, West Virginia's economy is never going to be able to compete.
So we might be able to order biscuits online, you know, if we ever get an underwriter, right, Scott?
Like we have an underwriter.
Yeah, I mean, like Tutors, though, you know.
Which you can read online, right?
Yeah.
That's true. Support for the Front Porch comes from the Charleston Gazette Mail, where you can hear both sides of the story every single day on their dueling editorial pages. Check it out at wvgazettemail.com. Senator Chris Walters, covering both Kanawha and Putnam County, and the author of A Bill to Expand Broadband very extensively throughout West Virginia. Thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck with that.